Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Herb, I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to our Zoom workshop on the 12-step application. Please join me in prayer for an open mind. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, my brokenness, the 12 steps, and you, for an open mind and a new experience of myself, my brokenness, the 12 steps, and especially you. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. We are on step one. We've officially started, and we're looking at one piece of the first step. You can see there on the screen, and you know the first step probably by heart. It has two parts divided by the dash. When I was 10 years sober going through this work for the third time with a step guide, that dash became very significant. Perhaps it will for you when we get to unmanageability. Right now, we're focused on the first half of the first step. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Of course, the demographic of this group is much broader than just alcohol, much broader than any substance addiction. Pretty easy to define, a substance being alcohol, drugs, and food. But it includes any addiction the professionals call process addiction, meaning there's no substance involved, but the dynamic of the individual in relationship to the process is the same as the substance addiction. My very informal definition of addiction, as you know. I'm not a scientist, I'm not degreed, I'm not certified. I'm fairly knowledgeable because of my exposure through the 12-step program. My sobriety date is February of 1984. I just celebrated 37 years, and for the last 32, I've been in hot pursuit of expanding and deepening my spiritual awakening, as well as shining the light on the path for other people to have their own experience of waking up. Like the dimmer switch I refer to, the lights go on at a low voltage. But if we stay gently pressed up against the dimmer switch with our activity one day at a time, one step at a time, one action at a time, taking direction from somebody who knows what they're doing, who similarly has had experience of using the steps as a methodology for waking up. We stay gently pressed up against the dimmer switch and the lights get brighter. Addiction is a problem. That's why we've come to a 12-step fellowship. Addiction might be a process, and it's going to be interesting and a learning experience for all of us to hear the process addiction people talk about how they connect the dots paralleling the substance addiction people, or especially the alcohol people. The book, Big Book, was written for alcoholics by alcoholics, and we're interpreting it and broadening out the vocabulary to encompass everybody else that has a problem with addiction. That first half of the first step is about, as the doctor's opinion said, something's wrong with our body, something's wrong with our mind. Right now, we're focused on the first half of the first half of the first step. So the two parts of that first half, we're looking at the body, the doctor's opinion. Eventually, we'll look at the spiritual malady, a problem of the willpower, and a problem of the spirit, a spiritual malady. I keep saying it so that you get used to the model that I use to help you understand and then unpack your experience with step one so that you can have a more profound, a deeper experience with step one. Bill calls it the foundation upon which we're going to build a spiritual arch through which we're going to walk to a new freedom. All of those words come directly out of the big book, and you'll understand them in 4 months, 5 months, if you don't now. Step one is the foundation. Step two is the cornerstone. And step three is the keystone. The next time we hear about the spiritual arch is at the end of the fifth step on page 75. And he says, now we've walked through the arch. Bill doesn't say this. The big book doesn't say this. But I'm assuming then that the building blocks of the component parts of step four are what constitute the arch. We look at resentment, we look at fear, we look at dishonesty, we look at secrets. And when we identify the underlying nature of these problems, we go deep down into the nature of human nature. What is in us that's broken, that needs to be healed? We become brain dead to the word powerless because we hear it and we use it all the time. And it becomes meaningless because we use it so many times in so many ways. And we don't think about it. We don't feel it. We don't experience it. Hopefully at the end of step one process, all aspects of step one, certainly with regard to the addiction, which is a presenting problem. It is a problem. It's just not the problem. The problem is unmanageability. Hopefully at the end of this, you will be able to, in a deep, meaningful way, use a synonym for powerlessness, perhaps no choice, that will bring goosebumps to you because it will recall for you immediately this darkness of no choice. No choice with regard to our addiction. That's the least of our problems. The most of our problems, the human problem, is that we have no choice with regard to our free will. Our free will is not free in many, many, many circumstances. And that's the unmanageability that Bill talks about in step 10, that we're not cured of, and that we have a daily reprieve of. That selfishness and self-centeredness, which is manifest in that resentment and that fear and that dishonesty and in keeping those secrets. Powerless. And we looked at the body. We are looking at it right now in the doctor's opinion. And he uses terms that we think we know, but I keep challenging you. And I hope you hear it. He uses the word allergy as a metaphor. It's not science. He's a medical doctor, but he's saying it looks like, it acts like, we can understand it when we use the term allergy. And then he uses a word craving, which really confuses us. Because we know what a craving is. It's a desire for something, and the dictionary backs us up. But when we read the doctor's opinion very carefully, he's using craving in a very different way. He's using it in a medical definition. He's using it in a biological definition. He's saying there's something wrong with your body. In the same way that you have an allergy to cats, or you have an allergy to shellfish, or you have an allergy to dust, or whatever triggers some really uncomfortable physical response, he said, that's the metaphor that I'm using for your addiction. when you engage, either by ingesting it, alcohol, drugs, or food, or beginning an action or a thought or a feeling, process addiction, something's released in your body, a chemical. He doesn't talk this specifically. So I'm trying to make his definitions and his vocabulary useful to us. I call it a biological mandate, a biological imperative. Once I engage, there's a trigger, biological trigger that goes off in me that creates a craving. And he doesn't mean thought, he doesn't mean feeling, he doesn't mean aware, he doesn't mean conscious. He means a biological chemical reaction, which we may not even be aware of, except for how it manifests, and that is, I lose control. It's really simple. Everything after the first drink or the first action is predictable and a story. And it's not relevant. After the first drink, after the first engagement, after the first action, it's not relevant. Because there's only one word for you if you're an addict. You lose control. Now there's also obviously some variations on individuals here. I've mentioned my wife was a chronic alcoholic and she grew into that after 10, 15 years of drinking on a daily basis. Then for the last 10 years of her drinking, she drank every day, and every day she drank till she passed out. Not mine. I did not drink every day. I would go a day or a week or a month without a drink. And when I did have a drink, probably over 50% of the time, even in the last year, I would have the one or two that I intended, and I would continue doing whatever it was I had intended to do. I call that a periodic. It obviously masks the truth from me or from anybody who can relate to that as a parallel experience. Once I take the drink, when the trigger is pulled, the craving begins, my chemicals demand more chemical of the alcohol, and I have what I call a compulsion. I don't know it, I don't feel it, I don't think it, I don't realize it, even the next day after 30 years of that experience periodically, I do not put the dots together. We're artificially separating the body and the mind because obviously there's something insane about that that I didn't see and I didn't put the dots together. But we're going to talk about the mind problem in a little bit, not today. And then we'll talk about the will problem even later. So today I want to talk about the 20 questions. If in fact you applied them to the particular issue that you're attempting to focus on, whether you know you have an addiction or not, you have an open mind and an open heart, and you're asking some questions, or even if you're a committed alcoholic and you've been sober for 10 or 20 or 30 years, I'm asking you to put it on the radar screen and take a look at it using these questions. These are not the 20 questions from the university that you've seen so many times in meetings or in recovery centers. I use that as a springboard to develop my own questionnaire, which includes not only alcohol and drugs and food, but it also includes behavior so that we can try to create a similar experience for the process addiction people. And then we're also going to take a look at and mostly spend the time looking at the worksheet on the body. It's not a test, please. It's a prompter. It's the most important thing for me was to get some information about the problem in the hospital program and to do an autobiography of my relationship with alcohol, not a general autobiography, as I've mentioned, but a specific autobiography of my relationship with alcohol, going from my first drink at age 12, what did I drink, how much did I drink, what happened when I drank, for the next 30 years, just the drinking episodes. What did I drink? When did I drink? How did I drink? How much did I drink? What happened? And when I did that and then read it out to somebody, kind of an inventory of my relationship with alcohol, that began to open the door for me to see that I had not seen that I had a problem with alcohol. And that began my journey. So this similarly is asking you to look specifically at your experience, not generally, not vaguely, not assuming that you're an alcoholic or that you're an Al-Anon, but what makes it so? What's my experience with addiction, the one I'm looking at or the one that I'm exploring looking at? Because there are many people here who have been in a 12-step program for an identified addiction, and now they know that there's trouble in their lives from some other possible behavior or substance. That second question, what happens when I indulge in this addiction? It asks for three specific examples. In 1968, I was being entertained by a group of insurance executives for a luncheon, celebrating a case that I had given them and that we had successfully closed and helped an employer with. That was the work that I did for 40 years. I loved my work and I was good at it. And this was early in my career. We went to a luncheon and it was going to be a big celebration. There were 8 people, big round table, private room, and somebody was hosting it and they were buying and they brought in the wine and it was like wonderful. But I had a business meeting at 3 o'clock that I needed to leave for, and I was in training to become a therapist. I was in graduate school to become a psychologist, and I had that list of potential clients to look at, to look after in the evening. So I had a full afternoon and evening already pre-planned, big commitments. But I began drinking and I stayed there till 10 o'clock. And then I was going to drive. And I thought I still had time to make some of my appointments. That's how delusional and drunk I was. Fortunately, the city police pulled me over and put me in jail. And that was my first 502. But in those days, it was like a traffic ticket. And so there were no consequences. I called a friend of mine, an attorney. He went to court for me. I wrote him a check. I wrote the court a check. It was like paying a ticket. But I'm bringing it up not to talk about the implications or ramifications, because there weren't any. There was no thought at all for me, no embarrassment, a little embarrassment, but not so much that I connected it to drinking. But I look back on that, despite the fact I had lots of responsibilities, not the least of which was coming home to a family safe, but I had other responsibilities connected to my work and my educational ambitions and people's lives, and I just blew it off. The alcohol hijacked me. Once I began to drink, I lost control. The assignment, we're moving into the mind next week. So it's assignment four, number 4. The whole assignment is to read pages 23 to 43, but I want you to do half of that, well, approximately half. Page 23 to 35, read and highlight that. And then examine the MIND worksheet. You don't need to complete it yet. Obviously, there hasn't been any teaching on it or any commentary on the big book until the next 2 weeks. But be aware of the questions. The key question, in the same way that I said simply, the body question is, what happens when I engage? Not 30 minutes from now, not tomorrow, but what happens immediately after I engage? That's the body question. The mind question is, what happens just before you engage? What are you thinking, feeling, or aware of within 2 minutes of a relapse? What are you thinking, feeling, or aware of within 2 minutes of a relapse? And that's the real challenge. The whole no choice concept is no choice after I begin, no choice when I stop, I will begin again. And we'll be looking at that very deeply. There's some other items on that assignment 4 in terms of definitions, item number 1. So do that. The page numbers I gave you are from item number 2, but just pages 23 to 35 would be sufficient. All right, so I want to use the majority of time tonight to have you share. I'd like you to focus on the body discussion, although you're obviously welcome to talk about spiritual awakening, step 11 meditation, step 10 inventory, anything in the Roman numerals that lead up to the doctor's opinion, anything about Bill's story. I want to focus on the body problem because that's where we're at in step 1, but it's open season on everything that we've covered. I don't want to take a look ahead and talk about the mind or unmanageability. That just gets in the way of an orderly progression. Although my personal experience was progressive over 3 different journeys through the steps with 3 different men over a 10-year period, I've brought that all together now, and I want to give you the progression in an orderly fashion over the next 3 months with regard to step 1.
Yeah. 2 or 3 classes ago, you had gone through, and you briefly mentioned it tonight, the archway and the keystone, and you highlighted those parts in the text. I was wondering if it's possible to get those page numbers again.
Oh, yes, yes. Page 47 for step 2 cornerstone, page 63 for, or maybe it's 62, for the keystone for the step 3, and page 75 for at the end of the step, at the step 5 conclusion. He talks about walking through the arch to a new freedom.
Yeah, thank you.
No, that's a great question. Thank you for asking.
When I, I'm looking at the chart, the body, starting with abstinence and compulsion, craving and allergy. So I started drinking when I was 14, and I just had it, and I got high off it, and I loved it, and I kept doing it. Yeah. But that was the only reason that I drank. I didn't feel like I had necessarily a compulsion or a craving.
Wait. It has nothing to do with how you feel.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with how you think.
Okay.
Are you in a 12-step program?
Yes.
Which one?
I was doing Joe and Charlie's.
No. Are you in a 12-step fellowship?
Yes, it's this right here, isn't it?
No, this isn't a 12-step fellowship.
Okay. I don't understand your question. I'm sorry.
Well, then you're not in one. Okay.
Now, no, well, yes. Do I attend meetings and
what
am
kind
I part of the fellowship?
Wait. What kind of meetings?
AA Daily Reflections meetings.
Oh, so you're in AA then?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, that would be the answer to the question. What 12-step fellowship are you in?
Oh, okay. In AA.
That's a 12-step fellowship.
Yes, it is.
All right. And how long have you been in it?
Well, I quit drinking a year ago on March 9th. So I've been in it since March 9th.
Why did you quit drinking?
Because I couldn't get drunk anymore.
Interesting. Mm. And
it wasn't fun.
You know, I've heard that. I don't understand it, but it's many people's experience. So, that's not foreign information to me. So when you were drinking, you said you started around 12 or 14 or whatever 14. It was. Mm-hmm. Did you ever lose control of your drinking?
Yes, many, 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 many times.
See, that's the only point here. Everything else you said is irrelevant.
Okay. All right.
See, because did you, let me ask a different question. Did you intend to lose control?
No.
Now we're getting some traction.
I was powerless.
I love to drink. I love the taste. I love the feeling. I drank. I never intended to lose control. I lost control regularly. Well, why? You're an intelligent man with lots of willpower, I'm assuming, in many other areas. Why did you lose control?
I couldn't stop.
Well, no, I understand that. But why?
That's a tough question.
It's not a tough question.
Why did I lose control?
The doctor has an opinion on that. What's the doctor's opinion?
That it's an allergy.
Okay, tell me what your thoughts are about an allergy.
Well, literally, an allergy means to be allergic to something.
And what would happen if you're allergic to something?
You'd get an adverse reaction if you did that.
Exactly. Biological reaction.
Yes.
All right. So he also uses the term craving. What do you think he means by that?
Well, when I think of craving, I think of chocolate.
I understand. That's what you think. That's what I'm trying to change.
Okay. All right.
All right. What have I spent time talking about in terms of the definition or the use of the word craving in the doctor's opinion? When does it occur?
After the first drink.
So that's not anticipating the first drink.
Right.
That's after the drink. Mm-hmm. I lose control. And correct. He says there's something in your chemistry that's corrupt. Okay. You put alcohol into your chemistry and it sets you on fire.
Right.
And you want to douse it with more alcohol. I mean, you're not even thinking about it, but it's what you're doing. You're losing control. Yeah?
That makes sense. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, connected to your experience, and that's where I asked you, did you ever lose control? Did you lose it more than once or twice? And you're saying, yeah, right? The times that I joined AA, for God's sakes.
That was three.
Yeah, right.
The 20 questions, I'm in OA. I'm a compulsive overeater. I've been in OA in and out since 88. These questions were very juicy. And I loved it.
It's a juicy word.
Yes, I love that word. And the body questions were wonderful. I know I'm a food addict. I have lots of examples, and I did that. What this led into with your process, I really started to question what's deeper, what else is going on. And I suddenly realized that I'm addicted to being codependent.
Okay.
And now I can hear every therapist I've ever had in my entire life laughing their ass off.
You mean because you finally got it?
Yeah, right. Yeah, because I finally got it. So, but when we're talking about the body and the addiction as an allergy, I don't know how to connect the codependency process to that.
Tell me an example that you have of your own experience of codependency. Observable behavior.
Yeah. One of them is there's a couple of nurses at work that I gossip with one about the other.
Are you a nurse?
Oh, yeah.
You're probably using a profession as a result of your codependency.
I've had many therapists point that out to me.
But it's a good thing. It's a good thing. The man who was my spiritual director said, Herb, you're a narcissist. He said, but you're doing a lot of good helping people. So keep that up. And that's helping your narcissism be managed. He said, God writes straight with crooked lines.
I love that. I love that quote.
Yeah. All right. So you have this relationship with the other nurses, or you don't, or you what? Where's the codependency?
Where the codependency is, I'm cutting the other nurse down, and I feel so superior and la-di-da.
Yeah. So now you're answering your own question, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You get some juice.
I do.
There you go.
Okay.
It's probably biochemical. Yeah. Yeah. And we don't have to get scientific with it. And no. You use the word juicy, and that's exactly what you get from this feeling superior.
Okay.
You All elevate right. that makes your sense. Mood. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Number two, what happens when I indulge in this addiction? And I'm a food addict, allergic to flour, sugar, and quantities. And if I take one bite of sugar or flour, or if I eat an ounce less or an ounce more, in my mind, it triggers this obsessive, compulsive, addictive thinking of more and more and more, opening cupboards, eating things that I normally wouldn't eat, binging when I normally never binged in my life until I, figured out I was a food addict. I didn't know I was a food addict for many years. And it changes my behavior so bad. I become abusive verbally. And it brought back to mind when my daughter was in grade school and I was high on sugar. And I actually went to a store and yelled at a clerk in front of my young daughter about something she had sold for a project that didn't work. And then I'm leaving the store thinking, oh my, what did I do? I need to apologize.
So I'm listening to some of the story, but we're not going to hear a lot of the story because it's not about the story. Mm-mm. It's totally predictable. Once you take the bite, you lose control, and it changes your body, and it changes your mind. It changes your emotions. Yeah.
And I cannot stop. Once I get that, I can't stop.
And so, again, the doctor's opinion says that he has an opinion about why you can't stop. What's your understanding now of it from the discussions that we've been having? Why can't you stop?
Well, I have an allergy, and it creates a craving, and it's a chemical imbalance. I mean, I cannot process it like I used to years ago. Like I years ago, I don't think I was a food addict when I was young.
Yeah, it's a progressive
Somewhere along the line, I passed the ability to say no.
Somehow. And what you also illustrated, and thank you for sharing it, is that it's not just the body. It does affect the emotions. It does affect the thinking. We're artificially making separations between the body and the mind, very artificially, so that we can understand the separate components. So I'm not even going to talk about the emotions and the mind part, because I want to stay with the body part. And then the next time, I'm going to give the assignment later on to move into the mind for our discussion next week.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just like an allergy to, like I'm allergic to preservatives, metabisulfites. And if I take this preservative, it affects my body chemically.
Yeah.
And I can literally say I blow up.
Yeah.
Literally, I get heavy.
Yeah.
Because of my addiction.
Yeah, yeah.
It is truly an allergy.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And that's the manifest, that's the physical manifestation of it. Mm-hmm. Not just the fat that comes with overeating, but the chemical change in the body system that creates bloating.
Right.
Yeah, that's, thank you. Thank you.
I'm curious about dealing with a spouse that's a workaholic that has no idea about any of this 12-step AA stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have a sponsor?
Okay, yeah.
Talk to your sponsor about that. But also, number one, is he asking for help?
He doesn't even think it's a thing or even...
It's none of your business. Yeah. And I have to say it cold and black and white. Yeah. Now, of course it's your business. You're his wife and you're concerned, of course. But that's where you talk to a sponsor and you may put your toes into Al-Anon a little bit and see what's going on there.
Okay. I did send him the 20 questions.
Of course you did.
I know. I just was like, oh, just check
of this out. Of course you did. All right. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Santa's little helper.
Thanks, Herb. Question is from the body workshop. It says, what is my experience with addiction? What can you get more? Can you be more specific or let us know? Let me know how I could work, dig into that a little and what you mean.
What's the addiction that you're holding in your question right now in your mind?
I am an alcoholic, so it'd be the addiction to alcohol. But as I'm in this workshop, I'm for sure looking at my food and sugar addiction. But
okay. Oh, so how long have you been in dealing with your alcohol addiction?
I've been sober in AA since 1998.
Oh, good long stretch. So now you're looking at food and what else?
Food and sugar.
Okay, yeah, sugar. Together. Okay, so in food and sugar, what does addiction mean to you?
It means, I can't stop. I can't stop with it.
Do you have a specific example in your head right now as you're thinking about it? A very specific example about where you lost control?
Yeah. After dinner tonight, I had in the course of the last 3 months, I put on 25 pounds from eating compulsively. And after dinner tonight, before I got on this workshop, I had one ice cream thing. And then I came back here to attend the session and I went and got two more. So it's just like,
okay. All right. So that's an example. Are you in a food program at this point, or you're just concerned and considering?
I have been in a food program over the years. I don't like being in food programs.
All right. So you're not in a food program right now.
Correct. That's correct.
But you're concerned about your relationship with food.
Yes, that's correct.
And what was your intention with regard to the first dish of ice cream?
What was my intention?
Yeah.
Dessert.
You were going to have dessert, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Did it include two more bowls after that? Your original intention?
No. It did. That was.
Oh,
maybe in the back of my head because I purchased the stuff. I purchased the things.
Do you always eat everything you purchase at once?
No.
Oh, so this is different then?
Yeah.
Okay. So are you answering your question now?
What is my experience with addiction? I suppose that's what you mean.
Well, I don't know what you call it. You intended to have a bowl of ice cream. You're concerned about gaining 40 pounds and you went back for two more bowls.
Yeah.
That's a real healthy attitude.
that's my experience of addiction then is.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. That would be, I don't judge that. You, it's up to you. Is that behavior that you intended? It's really hard to lose weight on 3 bowls of ice cream a night. Although you could do it by eliminating everything else. All right.
Got it.
All right. So thanks very much.
Thanks, sir.
Coming from an Al-Anon perspective, issues with control and anger.
Thank you.
Received a phone call. Phone call triggered me. And like that, I started to spiral.
So what was the nature of the phone call that triggered you?
It was my once a week video call with my children that I have a order of protection against me, so I don't get to see them. Yeah. In the nature of all honesty, wonderful call with the kids. But as the information floods into what's been going on, all stuff out of my control that I am attempting to give it up and let it go to God. I start spiraling. I have no control over this situation. So after the call was over, I felt compelled to try and track down someone I hadn't spoken to in over a decade, because I know that there's someone that if I was able to get a hold of, I can manipulate, control. I'm feeling bad about my life. I want to destroy someone else's life, to the point that I called a perfectly random stranger to be like, hey, is your daughter so-and-so? Can you give her a message with my name and number and tell her to give me a call? And I appreciate the laugh.
So the real issue is here, you have a weekly call, video call with your children, but this particular call set up the spiral, or do you spiral every time?
I'd say I spiral every time. This one went worse.
So, expected. I'll let you go for a little bit.
Yeah.
But again, everything after the awareness of the, I got into a spiral. Everything after that is just story.
I do like my stories.
Well, no, we all do. And I am absolutely not dismissing the stories. I'm just saying it's not necessary, because all we're looking for right now is the evidence that you have an addiction. And the doctor says, once you take a drink or once you begin a spiral, you're out of control. We can stop the conversation.
All right, then.
And that's why I asked about the regularity of it. And you said, well, it happens every time. Okay, yeah, of course. Now, it could have been a periodic situation, and then it would have been a little more difficult. But when it's happening every time, then yeah, there's pretty conclusive. It's you have this whatever it is, and that's up to you to now to what the trigger points are to kind of come to grips with that as we go through this work.
And just, I do not drink, I do not use drugs, I do not have the luxury of saying I also have a substance addiction or anything. This is pure unadulterated inner madness.
Well, okay, I mean, a bit dramatic, but no.
I'm very dramatic. I'm a drama factory.
No, you're a run-of-the-mill, not very special addict. You just happen to have a codependency. You have an Al-Anon codependency here. And you have this little trigger thing, not little, I'm not dismissing it, but it's like everybody else's. You're not unique and special, although you have this constellation of stuff that goes on that creates an awful lot of suffering for you and other people.
Why do I love the suffering? Why do I love causing the suffering, not only to myself, but other people?
I don't know the answer yet, but it's a gift that you have the question. And you'll hear me say that regularly. It's not a dodge. I really sincerely mean it. The question is so important that you have it, and I could hear it. It's resonating deeply in your soul, that question. And as you unpack step one, you might, but probably not, get an answer. But as you unpack step four, you will definitely get an answer to that question.
Understood. All right, yeah. Herb, thank you as always.
No, thanks. Wonderful conversation.
Just wanted to say that again, concentrating on this here in your lectures has made me aware suddenly that I have something I hadn't known I felt before.
Well, again, it's helping you have a question here because you're observing some behavior that you suspect is potentially going to lead to trouble. So you're asking a question. Okay, so what's going on? Wonderful. That's great. Yeah,
it's not the behavior, it's the physiological reaction. I mean, like we get from alcohol or from rescuing somebody.
Right.
And that got me into trouble. But so far, I don't know about this yet. Anyway, that's all I wanted.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, but so it's wonderful that you're in the workshop so that you can have the question so that you can intervene on yourself before you get in trouble. Thanks very much.
That's absolutely true enough. But thank you for that.
Having worked the steps in AA, I'm focused right now on working them from an Al-Anon perspective, more focused on symptoms related to relationships and behaviors and things like that. And so I'm wondering if you have any guidance or advice for shifting my perspective to look at this stuff from this other place.
Well, the advice is to look at your experience to get clear as to what you're meaning by a problem that brings you to Al-Anon, a problem that means relationship to you. What's the problem?
Oh, you know, squirrely boundaries.
That's very vague. How about being specific?
Being closed off or too open inappropriately in relations.
Still kind of vague. I'm looking for some behavior.
Oversharing with people in a professional situation or withholding emotions from people in a more personal situation.
All right. So what do you get out of that?
I would think, you know, protection from the closer relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm guarding something from the relationships I'm closer
with. Maybe it's this kind of questioning, though, that you need to do for yourself is, why are you even considering Al-Anon? What's the problem with the relationship? What's underneath the oversharing or the undersharing? There's a benefit and a value to you for some reason. And obviously, you're bringing it up because it's a problem. Nobody goes to Al-Anon because they think it's a good idea.
Well, you know, having identified character defects, I've been sort of pursuing them through Al-Anon work.
Why? Why don't you just pursue them through step 6 and 7?
Well, look, I guess because I've done that.
Apparently not, if you're still having them.
Well, that would be one perspective. So your guidance in this situation would be what?
Continue asking questions about why you're thinking about Al-Anon. What really is the, but get away from this vagary business. Get specific. What's the nature of the behavior? What's the nature of the thought? What's the nature of the feelings that is giving you this sense that there's something amiss? I mean, I actually don't know, but I'm challenging you and the balance of the group here, especially the Al-Anons, to come forth with the vocabulary, with the experiences, because it's not my vocabulary, it's not my experience, and they can probably help you, and then you can help me develop some more experience to help people like yourself get the vocabulary and the experience. Does that all make sense?
Absolutely, that would be ideal.
Yeah. So I'm so glad that you shared, but here's the suggestion that you asked for is, get much more specific with what you think is the source of the problem. And stay with those questions and then listen to people's responses who might be in Al-Anon or CODA or Adult Children of Alcoholic or something along of the relationship line. All right?
Thank you.
I just wanted to, I'll give an example in Al-Anon of what happens when I am using is someone will have a crisis situation. I will come to their aid. I will do everything in my power to help solve that crisis. I will drop all of my responsibilities. I will get a high and I lose time. And so that's where the under earning comes in for me. Mm-hmm. And
but like, the key there though, there's a feeling a of elation, a rush, yeah. Uh-huh. Adrenaline of some kind. I don't want to put any chemical terms on it, but stay with the general term. So that's what you're getting out of it. Yeah.
Correct. And it actually does include, I'm getting a dopamine hit.
Yeah, I'm trying to avoid the science of it because I don't want to get into science, but the feeling, okay. The feelings are great.
Okay. Well, it helps draw a line for me. So, so the way I tell I'm in anything, I'm in a four step and I had a step one experience because having done these worksheets over the years, I could tell my body in reaction to interacting with this person was getting a hit, was getting an obsession. I was losing time. I was unable to do certain things and I didn't know what was going on. I just knew I was having a step one experience and I couldn't see what I couldn't see, but I sensed something was different. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so my point is I just wanted to go to the under earning and time debting, which is really what it's about not being able to manage your time. And for me, it really is all the symptoms of under-earning are the symptoms of ADHD, which I have. Mm-hmm. And it's more like when I start, I can't keep going is kind of the difficult thing here. And it is avoidance, but I cannot plan. I cannot estimate time well. I cannot prioritize. And it's only when I realized that I had no choice over whatever was happening that I was able to get out of the shame of you should,
right.
This is an excuse, you should be able to do this. But once I do that and I connect, because as soon as I go to no choice, I connect. Yeah. And I did have a conversation with Herb the other day, however, where it was clear to me that, you know, some people might see something as an explanation and some people might see as an excuse. Mm-hmm. And that's each person's determination. Right. However, I did realize that since you don't have this issue, just yes. Like an alcoholic can only help an alcoholic.
Yes.
I understood in that moment when I was talking to you that I don't need to explain to you.
No.
And it was such a helpful cure for my codependency. Right. In that moment, something got lifted of like, oh, I don't need him to get it because I know. And the excuse for me that was coming up was me needing to prove or show to someone else mm-hmm. what's going on with me
yeah.
in order to address it.
See, and the benefit of that is you're able to do that for two reasons, or at least two. Number one is you have some information now about how you work internally. And number two, you have some experience now of actually being able to understand it and cope with it and deal with it effectively. Not all the time, but at least you have some. And so I'm saying that for everybody else's sake, we get this information and we get some experience and we're able to deal more effectively with ourselves.
And the last thing I'll say is another thing you really enunciated in that call was like, this is your process and you need help. Like you need help, ask for the help you need. And that's up to you.
Yeah.
That's your responsibility. And so I also do, you know, I have needed outside help and I have needed things that have been essential in this process because this is work.
Yeah.
It's hard work and I owe it to myself to get the support I need. And thanks, Herb.
Thanks so much.
My question is kind of twofold and it gets into your body questions and the questionnaire. And you often hear people talk about an addictive personality. And I don't know if on your 20 questions, if you start answering yes, 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 yes. And then you start, the default answer is yes.
Let's stay with that because what you're saying is people think it's a test and they want to get through it and they're taking the easier, softer way. And that's not what it is. It's not a test. it's a challenge. It's an opportunity for you to ask the question of yourself experientially, not here in your head, not here in how you feel, but how do your feet move in relationship to the question? So I'm hoping that's what people will do. And I don't believe in the addictive personality.
Okay.
I'm not a psychologist, but maybe they do.
Well, I wondered about that because I answered yes to a lot of, basically all of the questions. I'd have to double check to see what my percentage is. But when I also did the body and I started looking at the body question, I fall in more than one camp from once I start, I can't stop.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how to parse that together because I've often heard people talk about you need to focus on your primary addiction.
I agree with that.
So what is primary addiction to you? Like, how do you, because all these things.
I'm an alcoholic. There's a high likelihood I have a codependent component in me. All right. I'm aware of it. I've read some books on it. I've never done anything in terms of personally exploring it, but I'm pretty confident that there's a level of codependency in me, which comes from being in a house where there was a raging alcoholic and an out of control Al-Anon. There's got to be those process addiction dynamics in me. But I think with my focus on my primary program, I'm able to deal effectively with it by my standards. I sometimes recommend to people if they have a addiction problem of substance like alcohol or drugs, that sometimes they do need and want to have and benefit from going to Al-Anon. All right. And so they get a sponsor with maybe the same kind of experience, or they get two different sponsors to help them navigate their program and maybe the difference in the step process. So I'm assuming then that you have multiple behaviors that are compulsive. And I do understand compulsive personality, and that is a personality disorder. But I don't understand addictive personality. I think it's loose nomenclature vocabulary in AA meetings to cover this kind of repetitive behavior, which probably has a better word for it in the psychological diagnosis, but I'm not capable of doing that.
Okay.
So, I mean, isn't it interesting that you're having this experience though? And so, what is the one that is, here's how I define primary, the one that is creating the most difficulty in your life in terms of quality? And it might be that I'm an alcoholic who's developed a pornography addiction, and the alcohol isn't a problem, although that's my primary addiction. It has now manifest into pornography as an addiction. I'm actually losing jobs and losing relationships as a result of it. This is not my experience now. I'm talking about people that I work with. And I'll talk much more about that when we get into unmanageability, the spiritual malady. But Bill says that if you don't treat the spiritual malady, all right, then we play whack-a-mole. He doesn't say that, but essentially.
Yeah, well, and I would say I sort of have the whack-a-mole style because it's like I get one sort of, I'll use the word control, it often slips out, and I'll kind of get one managed, and then poof, another one will pop up, I get that
because
one
because you're dealing with symptoms.
Well, and I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Even alcohol, Bill says in the big book, alcohol is a symptom. Alcohol is a symbol. It's not the problem. He says it in the big book, page 64, page 102, I believe. All right. Alcohol's not the problem. He says it in other places too. The problem is unmanageability. The problem is, in the book, a spiritual malady. My proposition and my vocabulary is the problem is human nature. Yeah. And we'll see that when I unpack unmanageability, and then y'all make up your own mind as to the vocabulary that you want to use concerning spiritual or human.
I forget how you worded it. You worded it quite nice about you didn't know what you didn't know.
Yeah, that's it.
And I believe there's something, there's some sort of common threads in all this mess. Yep.
Yes, there is. Your suspicion is correct.
Yeah, I don't know yet. I have a suspicion of a few things, but that's because they're easy.
Yeah, well, easy, but it's great. Spot. It's great that we've created the energy in you with a question, because now as we make progress, there's going to be, you know, there's going to be stuff that's get some flesh that it gets put on the skeleton.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Wonderful.
My questions were around this, do I have an addiction questionnaire as well? And I also answered yes to every answer, more or less. And then the other day I was also in a meeting, and that they brought up the subject of Al-Anon. And anyway, I went on one of those, and because I'm a child of a alcoholic as well. And I answered yes to most of those. So I just wondered, like, is that the usual experience? Because I seem to...
You know what? I don't know the answer to that, because I'm just unaware of that. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, and that
it really... almost doesn't matter, does it? Because it's your experience.
Yeah, fair enough. So that was just a brief question, but surrounding addiction, and I would say my primary addiction is alcoholism. Mm-hmm. In alcoholism, when I was an active drinker, I had multiple other addictions, which I would say supported that addiction,
right,
like be it drug use, tobacco use as a byproduct, pornography, yes, and or sex.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
So that was during active addiction. Mm-hmm. Outside of active addiction, I'm experiencing the other aspect of the, now that I have removed the primary addiction of alcohol and drugs and tobacco, there's other areas which
absolutely
my body is just, or my person is naturally gravitating towards.
Yeah, well, you've got to find some way to reduce the tension.
Exactly. So can you suggest or provide some insight into how that might?
Yeah, stay with us.
Yeah.
For one, I don't want to be glib, but I'm also going to say the problem will become very clear when we get to unmanageability. Okay. Unmanageability is the root of our problem, and I'm quoting the big book, page 62. You can take a look at those two paragraphs. They're the silver bullet that describes the exact nature of unmanageability. I don't mind a bit. You kind of like do the reading, because we're raising the issue, we're raising the questions. I don't want to talk about it, but I mean, I'll help you feed your question. Absolutely.
All right.
Thanks very much.
My experience with my own life and with the people I've sponsored, we all have a problem with time management. You know, it's like this belief that you can get 26 hours in a 24-hour day. And and I'm thinking, is that the time deading thing? Is that like, I don't know, you just sort of made me feel crazy about this.
Again, you're hearing new experiences which are raising questions in you, and you don't have to have an answer, but it's really important to have a question so that you can in fact discern if there's an issue here with you in terms of time. Now, it could be that you're a workaholic.
Well, I was a very adamant practicing workaholic before I retired. Yes. And I was in therapy over being a workaholic. I had to have rules about how I changed my life.
Very dumb. Is it manifesting in your retirement?
Well, I think what is happening is I have this, I continually am scheduling, and I'm being efficient with my time. Oh. And I mean, I really do know that some days when I get everything I wanted to get done in less than I thought it might take me. I mean, I get a high over that. I just get like, I want to lay down on the couch and call people and say, you can't believe what I accomplished today. It's, and I'm thinking, oh shit.
I really
still there.
Yeah. Well, it's only a problem if it's a problem.
Yeah, so awareness.
Not like, to ask, it, yeah. does it diminish the quality of your life? The moment it begins diminishing the quality of your life, meaning a relationship with yourself and other people.
I think it diminishes my relationships with other people because I often choose to do it alone so I don't have to deal with other people being late or not wanting to.
Well, you'll look at all of that and then. What came out of this for me was an awareness of what balance means. Now, I'm not always in balance. It's very elusive for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I've known what it means now for about 30 years. And if anything, that's my chronic target every day is to try to be in balance.
Ever since I can remember as a little girl, I was out of control with my food addiction. And where, you know, at 14, I was just so huge that bulimia was my option. And my first drink was my first drunk. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like blacked out, passed out, like,
mm-hmm.
you know. So
what fellowship are you in?
I'm in a number of fellowships, Herb.
What's your primary one?
That's a conundrum for me. I'm vacillating between ACA with the trauma stuff and my food addiction when it comes to substance.
Okay, well, I mean, those are two very major kind of issues, and they may both be primary. Yeah, and so tell me about one of them in terms of the parallel experience with the allergy and the craving.
So. All right, so it's easier to talk about the food.
Yes, because, it is, actually, yes.
Because, you know, it's very tangible of, you know, like I can go shopping, you know, or I can just walk somewhere and then all of a sudden my mind would see, you know, what's there, you know, in front of me, substance. And if all of a sudden my mind pays attention to it, like longer than 3 seconds, basically, where I stare at it, it's like, I do catch myself today to go, whoa, what am I looking at that for? You know, like that's poison. So there's no reason to look at that. But most of the time I don't find myself looking at it. And it's, why am I looking at it all of a sudden? That's the thing that gets me.
Well, then we'll be talking about that more relevantly, I believe, in the mind problem. But let's assume that you're in your food addiction 12-step program because you do lose control. Do you have a memory of an experience that you can relate to us about intending to have a bite and losing control?
Oh, there's so many times where I'm intending to have a bite and losing control and trying to manage it.
All right. So were you ever able to manage it consistently?
Only times that I find that I manage it consistently is when I have boundaries around it and I have the help. I need attention to yeah. manage it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's my spiritual solution, the language of the heart.
Are there any foods that in fact you find it impossible to manage? Even with help and boundaries?
If you want to call them foods. sure, let's just talk about the equivalent of alcohol, cheese pizza, right? All right?
So what happens when you have a piece of cheese pizza? You're going to have one or two slices of cheese pizza because that's all I need for lunch or for dinner. And what happens?
I don't just have one. I want more and I want more and I want more and I want more. And I want this and I want that and I want, you know,
and you lose control. And it's more than I want. It's like I'm doing it without much thought at all or without much awareness or any feeling.
You know, knowing that I knowing that I'm an addict, I just, and then I suffer from this malady. I don't try to fight it. I just go with it. The only thing I can do is like try to save my life through purging, you know, because I know it's out of control and I know that I'll overdose.
Sure. Yeah.
And so, I did with alcohol too. I overdosed.
It's so easy for us to slip into the story and the consequences, neither of which are relevant. It's, I wanted to have one or two pieces of pizza and I was never able to control it. What's that? I mean, you're smart. You've got willpower in many other areas of your life. Why can't you do that? In fact, you've got willpower to have help and boundaries in other foods, but not with that particular one. And so, and this is not necessarily a question to you. It's more a rhetorical question for you to reflect on your experience. This is the example of no choice. This is the example of the doctor's opinion that there is a something in your body chemistry that creates a trigger for this particular food that makes it impossible for you to stop once you start. That's what we mean by no choice.
Yeah.
On the body worksheet, when you first assigned it a couple of weeks ago, I did it really quickly. I thought, oh, I know I'm a food addict. I don't need any more help with this. And I answered it very quickly and very superficially. And last week when you said, treat it like an autobiography, I sat down with it again. And for the first question, I may have written 3 or 4 pages.
Wow.
And I wouldn't have thought that. I surprised myself of the amount that I wrote for each of the questions, but especially that first one. Went back to when I was a baby.
Glad that you're sharing it the way you're doing it, because it will encourage other people to take these directions, not as like check boxes, but literally to attempt to create an experience for yourself. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. It deepened.
Yeah.
To a level that I wouldn't have, I wasn't even aware of
in my
awareness of how far back and how deep it was.
My experience with this open mind, open heart business is it takes me to a place I didn't even know existed.
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. I have another question for you. Mm-hmm. I wanted to tell you about that, but I've been in FA for 10 years, but for the last 3 years, I've been dealing with relapse off and on. And this is the first workshop that I've done with you. And I'm doing a lot of different things with you now, but this is the first time. And from the beginning, when we started in January, I was able to be abstinent in my program.
And what then, changed?
Pardon me?
What changed?
It just, everything felt different to me. When we first started from the very beginning, the very first day, it was something, in a different way I hadn't heard before. Maybe I just hadn't heard it before. It just felt really different.
I know exactly what you mean. Yep.
And it felt new. It felt new, kind of like when I first came in program.
Yeah.
But a couple of weeks ago, I did break my abstinence. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was spiritually fit. What happened? What wasn't I paying it? Was I not paying enough attention? Was I don't know, but yeah. I just thought.
And that's the question you want to hold as we're looking through this whole business about next week and the week after about relapse.
Yeah.
What were you thinking? What were you feeling? Your suspicion and intuition is right on the money. Something's amiss.
Yeah.
But I don't hear you beating yourself up over it. I hear disappointment, but you're actually asking a very mature question. So what the hell?
I actually saw it as a kind of a test that I snapped back there for a moment, but then I did act on it though. I mean, I did do it.
Yeah, right. No.
All
right.
I'm looking forward to what's coming. That's all.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you.
My questions, I just went over those that, you know, both with alcohol and opiates, I used them, I love both of them,
I kept going no matter what, even when the consequences were really negative, you know, when I would nearly lose my life or go to prison.
Are you in a 12-step program now?
I have been in since 1975.
Oh, okay. And which one is your primary 12-step program?
Right now, the PA, Pills Anonymous, and AA. I go to both, really.
All right. And it sounds like you're recently in Pills Anonymous?
It just recently started in Houston, but when I went to AA, I was also abstinent from everything.
I see. Okay. And so did you have a question for us?
Well, I guess not so much a question. I guess we were just going over the things. And so I kind of wanted to introduce myself and say, you know, I'm going reviewing the questions. And like the other lady just said, it's kind of seeing them a little bit differently. And, you know, more at depth of just the body allergy. And
it's been a long time, though. It's been a you've been abstinent a long time. Can you remember back when you lost control when you started?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. And did you do that more than once?
Many, many, many times.
Yeah.
From age 9 or 10.
Yeah. Well, what's your understanding of the problem then that brought you into a 12-step program?
My inability to control it, my allergy, my loss of control.
Yeah, once you start, you cannot stop.
Right, and I could not stay stop either because of the, you know. But yeah.
Well, that's a different issue.
Yeah. I absolutely had this reaction from once I did it that I wasn't going to stop till I could not have any other, you know, they'd have to lock me up, tie me down, something like that.
Yeah, and that's just all drama because the only question that's relevant is what happens reasonably immediately once I take the drink or the pill.
I want more.
And I use more whether I want it or not. I don't even think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not about want. It's about doing.
Yeah, I did more.
I did more. That's really the answer. Thanks very much.
Just have two quick questions.
Sure.
I've been hearing some terminology tonight I don't really understand.
All right.
Al-Anon codependency.
Yes. What part?
What does that mean?
I'm not sure what you're asking. Are you asking about Al-Anon or codependency?
Well, I keep hearing it together.
What is your understanding of codependency?
Well, codependency I see as being dependent upon something else.
Well, I'm an alcoholic. I was dependent on alcohol. That's not codependency.
Okay, so what is codependency then?
Well, that's a conversation, a side issue. You could look that up, by the way.
Okay. But
my understanding is it's getting my sense of value from what other people think of me. And that's part of a symptomatic of an Al-Anon, but it might only be part of it. So, yeah, and those things you can look up on your own, okay?
I just had a question. I'm kind of, as I'm listening to this and going through these questions, my main draw here was for alcohol, and I'm in a 12-step program for AA.
Yes.
And I'm seeing more of a food addict. And so I'm wondering if it even matters if I find the primary right now, or if I just keep going forward with alcohol, or if that even matters at this point.
How long have you been in AA?
I just got 90 days, 3 days ago.
I would focus on AA.
Okay.
Yeah. Congratulations. Wonderful. You got some traction. Stay with that one. And I do believe it will have what we call a halo effect. The work that you do with regard to this workshop in your direct focus on alcohol will have a benefit to you in any other area.
Okay.
But focus on the alcohol right now. With 90 days, you just got so many new experiences to have, okay? And do you have a sponsor?
I do.
Great. And you might talk to the sponsor about that. All right.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks. Wonderful question. Great.
You have sort of given me new ways to see myself that I have not seen myself before or looked at myself. I have been like 17 years in food addiction. I have, as I said before, I break a lot, and that is known as a chronic relapser, which I don't like that term. and also the idea that I may be a periodic food addict, which scares the hell out of me, because, you know, last night you said something like, when an addict is an addict is an addict, you just don't know when you're going to go off.
Yeah.
And that's why I did the 20 questions really carefully. I mean, instead of the yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes, 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 no, no. I actually wrote, I wrote a lot about each question, and I am a food addict. No question. But you said that, that you get a high from eating, and I get, and through the years, part of me, like when I break, instead of continuing down the rabbit hole and just eating more and condemning myself or whatever, I'm able to, maybe I'm kidding myself. I'm able to learn to forgive myself, to ask God to forgive myself and ask myself to forgive myself and like to move on. But the question I think is, I was trying to think, what is my question? When I do eat more than quantities, okay, and binge foods and that, the hit, you talked about a hit, and I wonder if my hit is not like the shoulders going down 4 inches or that. I think my hit is the self-loathing and despair. That's sort of the, I don't know, keeps me in a place that I'm familiar with or something. I have no idea. But is it possible to have a hit or something that is not dopamine, whatever, that is just a...
Well, again, you're asking the great questions. Keep with the questions and see what this process reveals to you. The mind work that we will do will be much more interesting and much more subtle. And it could help with giving you some information and or an experience that will help you answer that question. All right?
Okay, thanks a lot. Yeah. I appreciate taking your time.
Yeah. When I start losing touch or with experiencing the promises, that's usually a warning sign that I got to come back to this workshop. And I've been doing this every 3 years, and it's about time that I've done it. Mm-hmm. And this time coming back, I'm, you know, the first thing I kind of noticed was that, these process addictions, because I thought my solution to get back to experience the promises was to come back and do the work as an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm wondering, am I supposed to approach this through the prism of a process addiction? Specifically, am I addicted to anxiety? The past 6 weeks, I've been having anxiety attacks just increasing, mm-hmm. and everything I try to do to alleviate them in kind of a physiological sense is not working. So when I, the couple times I've come back to the workshop, I'm noticing that, anxiety can also be an addiction, or is that a symptom of untreated dry alcoholism?
Well, see, it's wonderful that, and I'm sort of repeating myself a lot tonight, that you have the question, and there's no downside to exactly the juxtaposition of questions that you just ask. Is it something on its own that's beginning to go like crabgrass? Or is it in fact that I haven't dealt or continue to deal or foster my original issue and in terms of my unmanageability, spiritual malady? Just hold those questions, continue doing this work in step one that we'll do. And I'm confident at the end of the step one work, you will have a conclusion that will be very satisfactory.
I went through the 20 question questionnaire with the hat of an alcoholic, very easy to answer.
Yep.
And then I said, hey, am I an anxiety addict? And I started answering them. And of course the answers came out different.
Mm-hmm.
And hence the question I asked was, how am I supposed to, or what prism? And I hear what you're saying is just stick with it. But do I use a prism in order to approach?
The prism of set aside prayer is what I would be suggesting. And as I recall, and you, I think your nomenclature there on the picture says that you're now in Hawaii. You've made a very, very huge life change. Maybe it's a situational anxiety. So just keep in mind that, you know, we're human beings and lots of parts may be misfiring right now.
They are.
Yeah, yeah. It's great to have you with us again. Good. Please join me in the serenity prayer. We'll bring it to conclusion. Please join me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.